Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Floor on Friday, the 6th of May, recording at 9:08 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first, as always, let's have a very quick review of the week. In terms of stock markets, mostly a softer tone, which had originally been led by Asia, and then that spread to Europe and the U.S., although most of Europe scored some modest gains in here today, as did Wall Street. But we're talking about less than 0.5% on Wall Street. Brazil, which has been flirting with prior lows, bounced in here today up 1.68%. Now, long-dated government bond prices generally firm. Interesting day for the U.S. Treasuries. They were sitting on talking about the futures, 30-year Treasury futures, they were sitting on a key day reversal at one stage, but then managed to close up on the day. Is that Bernanke buying, or fear or hope of Bernanke buying? Who knows? More on that in a moment. The U.S. dollar followed through today with a bit more of a gain. The dollar index is up to 74.73. A lot of that's against the euro, which fell to 143.52. And the dollar wasn't strong across the boards. It was down against the yen. It was down against the Australian dollar, I noticed, which is back up to 107.04. And the big drama on the week, of course, has been silver, which absolutely plunged. And although it's not quite finished, the post-hours trading looks like it's going to close out here with another small decline today, but it's over $2 off its low. Talk about volatility. And we've got silver at 35.33 as I speak. And gold bounced back. At one stage, gold was sitting on a key day, gold was sitting on a weekly key reversal, but it pushed back up, closed to up 18 at 14.92, or that's where it's trading at the moment, with a few minutes to go. So it's just avoided that. More on that in a moment. Slightly steadier on palladium and platinum. Ditto the industrial metals, but crude oil, importantly, is lower. We've got WTI crude down to 97.81, that's down $2, and the Brent is just had a smaller decline, but it's just under the $110 level, so big downward dynamics there on the week. And most of the soft commodities have been weak. The grain and bean complex, corn weakened here today. And that's deteriorated here recently. Again, more on that. Okay, so what's going on here in terms of the big picture? Well, commodities were always likely to win that big tussle here in terms of stock markets, which I described as being caught in that tug of war or the scrum between the beneficial factors of monetary accommodation for stock markets, beneficial for stock markets, that is, and the increasingly negative implications of the commodity price inflation, not least the spike in crude oil prices, which I've described it as a moderate spike, but it was certainly enough to take the bloom off global GDP growth, and therefore stock markets, which have been enjoying the liquidity and the economic recovery and the generally sound position that many of the fuller money themed big multinational companies leverage to the China-led growth, which have done so well. But stock markets are now at that awkward stage where they're saying, well, the QE2 is going to end, and it's not yet certain whether or not we're going to get a QE3, but we haven't heard anything about that yet. And the GDP growth will be slower, so people will be factoring in lower corporate profits or lower rate of gains in corporate profits than they were expecting somewhat earlier. Now, yes, the commodity markets have broken in a big way following that silver slide, and the huge downward dynamics that we saw in crude oil, for instance, yesterday, and most commodities have come off. Copper is back under the $4 level. So that's positive for the second half of the year, but it's not going to do much here in the short term. And stock markets are going to spend a while just discounting this less favorable environment for GDP growth and corporate profits caused by the commodity price inflation. And of course, we've had in the growth economies, we've had central banks ratcheting up those interest rates because they do have a genuine inflation problem. And they've been getting that not only from commodity prices, which are bad enough, but also from wage pressures as well. Now, in the West, we don't have the wage pressures, or we don't have much of that, but we certainly have the commodity price inflation. And only Bernanke seems to be in denial about that. Well, that's not quite fair. He says he thinks that it's temporary and it'll go away. Well, it'll subside somewhat, but I don't think it's going to go away. We have to remember we're in a secular bull market here in terms of commodity prices. Now, that secular bull market will be volatile. It's a point I've made all along. We've been forecasting this for 11 years, and inevitably it's going to be volatile. It will be punctuated by some big corrections when global GDP growth slows. We're in one of those phases right now. It will fall sharply when we get a recession. And in a lengthy commodity super cycle, and historically, some of these have lasted a generation, some of them have lasted almost two generations. The one in the 1970s lasted only 10 years, but that's because Paul Volcker came in with a brief to crush inflation, and he did. With sky-high interest rates, the likes of which we have not seen since the early 1980s, but things get out of control, we will see again within the next 10 to 15, 15 years. But hopefully the inflation pressures don't get that bad to necessitate that kind of savage monetary tightening. Although once you come out of that phase, then it does set stock markets up for a good long boom period, and ditto government bonds. But I digress. So we're in an environment that remains a bit tricky here for stock markets. Now, that means it's harder to make money. I don't think we need to bail out of fuller money theme positions. And I well, those include high yielders, high covered yielders, and I certainly wouldn't bail out of those. We may well see greater volatility in the so-called emerging markets. I think it's better to think of them as the progressing economies or growth markets. But we'll probably see more choppy action and some drawdown. I think we'll also see that in the Western markets. And it'll be a tricky period. Now, therefore, I'd be careful. You and I can only deal with the reality that markets provide, and this is not an optimum money-making period at the moment. 2009 was wonderful, massive panic, terrific recovery, all that liquidity, monetary stimulus. 2010, equally good, just about. This year is a little bit more difficult. I'm hopeful that if we get a decent commodity correction, and that seems to be well underway. And what we do need, though, is a little bit of luck in terms of weather. We need some good crop yields. And the United States has been subjected to the most traumatic weather conditions in the South and Midwest part of the country. The Browning letter had forecast that, but she's also forecasting better conditions for the summer. Let's hope so, because the world really does need some decent crop yields to replenish stocks, which are at dangerously low levels. Now, that's so important for all other asset classes, because if we get good crop yields, and supply is always the key variable in as far as these agricultural commodities are concerned. We know demand's going up, and it will virtually always be going up, except when we have the more severe recessions. So supply is the big variable, and if climate change, whatever its causes, is an increasing problem, then we've all got problems. And more commodity price inflation is not what we need here in the short to medium term. We need some respite. On a longer term basis, I think we will see higher commodity prices overall. Hopefully not in terms of big price spikes, especially for energy. But I've mentioned, in terms of energy, this is the tricky period. We have a very finely balanced supply-demand situation. The demand trend for energy is increasing, led by the growth economies, rapidly rising demand. And solar panels and those expensive subsidized windmills just don't cut the mustard here in terms of making a significant difference. And the so-called Arab Spring and the Arab Uprising has knocked out Libya's production, and that's a problem. So that tightens the situation, supply situation further, although the Saudis have mostly made up the difference. But then Japan's Fukushima accident, really due to the horrendous tsunami and a bit of neglect on their part in these very, very old reactors. But it's caused a lot of nervous politicians to back off their nuclear development plans. And so that's put the nuclear renaissance, which we were all talking about prior to Fukushima, it's put that very much on hold. Some of the growth economies, China and India, are certainly going to press ahead, and their needs are great on energy, and they want that energy security. But here we got Germany closing down a number of power stations and then having to buy energy from France, which comes from the nuclear power stations. Bit of irony there, isn't there? The US is the UK is in a similar position, having to buy from France on occasion. So I think this is going to be a tricky period here overall for energy for at least 5 years, and more likely 10 years. But I do project that as we go further into the future, that we will find a radically different situation emerging. And I maintain that the United States will be energy independent in 12 to 15 years' time. And that's due to the good fortune and the very smart technology that has enabled the U.S. to tap its oil shale and its gas shale, the shale gas. And I was going to switch it around. It is Friday, and after 9 o'clock. So the shale gas first, and then the shale oil. Now, the U.S. is the Saudi Arabia of shale oil. It's supposed to have at least 1.5 billion recoverable barrels. That's staggering. And most of it is in accessible areas, so thus recoverable. And they've also got the world's second largest holdings of shale gas. And that has helped to keep energy prices lower in the United States than they would have otherwise been. And it's helped the economic recovery, such as it is. Now, China and other countries are rapidly moving to start developing and producing their own shale gas, and there's a lot of it around the world. And so this technology will be utilized by a lot of other countries. And it's going to transform the energy scene over the next 12 to 15 years. As I say, the U.S., there isn't any reason why the U.S. shouldn't be energy dependent, and that's allowing for increased demand for energy as people use more and more tablets and phones and games and other gadgets in addition to the household lights and the automobiles and all the machines that run, big machines that run in homes, like refrigerators and air conditioners. Similarly, China ought to be energy independent. China has the world's largest reserves of shale gas and the world's second largest reserves of shale oil. But that's 12 to 15 years down the road. And the tough period we've got to go through first. And we certainly know that energy prices are going to go up because of all these subsidized windmills and the subsidized solar panels and not enough nuclear energy. So we need all the various energy sources that we can actually get, and we need to see a rapid development, or as rapid as possible, of the shale gas and shale oil around the globe. But that takes time. It takes years to get that underway. But again, that does suggest a future out there. Make that quantum leap into, say, 2025, and the picture should really be quite attractive. And that will underpin the global GDP growth supercycle that I've been talking about, and that Standard Chartered has been talking about. You can't have a global supercycle without affordable energy and lots of it. And of course, that supercycle will be driven by the growth economies. They're the engine. And the United States, which for so long was the engine of global GDP growth, is further back in that train. It's no longer the locomotive, but it's a very big and important passenger car, and it'll benefit U.S. multinational companies, are certainly benefiting from their sourcing of products and manufacturing in the Asian growth economies, but also selling to those consumers as well. Okay, so how to play these stock markets? Well, cautiously here, as I say, in the short term, I don't favor heavy selling. I'm certainly not going to do that myself, but I wouldn't be aggressive in here. I think there's a good chance that we'll get a bit more of a pullback as markets discount this somewhat weaker environment for corporate profits, and that will create some more buying opportunities in the next few months. Now, we're also in a less favorable period seasonally for stock markets, as you know. The seasonal factors don't always work, but they've got every reason to work this time around. Okay. Now, what else to mention? These long-dated government bond prices. Well, they've kind of had a good few weeks in here, good couple of months in here. I don't think it's sustainable. Overall, I maintain that long-dated government bond yields are bottoming out. Just too many bonds. And we're not going to get that severe recession, let alone the depression that so many people were forecasting a year or two ago. And we will see some more inflationary pressures, although they may subside a bit as the commodity prices ease back temporarily. I don't like these long-dated government bonds, and I don't like the junk bond funds, the high-yield funds that have been quite fashionable. I would, if you want yield, and we all do, or most of us do, I would certainly prefer equities. And I think that equities are going to be in a strong position. I was talking about those multinational corporations that are leveraged to the Asian-led growth story, and they have strong balance sheets. They have a market opening up before them that is beyond dreams of corporate management 10 to 20 years ago. It's just vast as we get these middle classes growing in leaps and bounds in Asia and also Central and South America, India. So that's a really very appealing story. As I say, these companies, unlike their respective governments, have very strong balance sheets. That means they've got lots of cash, and they've been able to reduce debt because they went into survival mode following the 2008 stock market crash and that difficult recession. So what are they going to do with that cash? Well, they'll hold on to some of it. They'll spend some of it on upgrades, not least in IT, to increase productivity. They will do some takeovers, hopefully judicious takeovers, not paying up in boom times. And they will do some share buybacks. And they will also make some dividend increases. And that's a relatively attractive story. Stock markets tend to be somewhat volatile overall, but they're going to be more good times than bad times. That's my point. And come 2025, and there'll be some very good times. So I like that long-term story, and I'm going to stay very much invested in for money. Secular themes. Okay, commodity markets. I think I've talked about that. We're going to see a further retracement of some of those gains. Now, a lot of those big gains were created by tracker funds, and you know, it's all these ETFs and the various different institutional funds, and that's a situation that's a little bit out of control, in my opinion. Some of these commodities, it's fine. It's fine to a point. In gold and silver, these are monetary metals. But crude oil, corn, wheat, soybeans, I mean, these were not meant to be buy and hold asset classes. And so I think that's created a considerable rod for our back and our collective backs. And I'd like to see less of it, but that will not happen without some form of legislation to limit it. And I don't know if we're going to are going to see that, but it certainly has been a problem here recently. But we're seeing a lot of people cash out of those now, most spectacularly with silver, to a lesser degree with gold. I think we're also seeing it right now in some of the copper positions that have been held. We've seen it in crude oil, that $10 drop yesterday, and hopefully we get a bit more of that, lowering the inflationary pressures. And if we get good crop yields, then that will be a boon for the second half of this year. But we have to get there first, and we don't know how these crops are going to play out over this current season, and from China to Europe to the USA. So lots of things to keep an eye on. In terms of those agricultural commodities, it could turn out very nicely or be another disaster, in which case we'll feel the repercussions absolutely everywhere. But if we get a little bit of luck in that respect, and if we do see these commodity prices experience a significant medium-term correction in terms of just going off the boil here for a number of months, central banks will relax in terms of some of their inflation-fighting efforts. If we don't, if that commodity inflation picks up again, they'll be forced to, or feel forced to raise rates, even though that's a very blunt weapon to deal with commodities. They ought to really tackle the commodity speculation head on, but that's another story, and I don't want to digress too much on that. Now, what about currencies? The dollar has been a concern all along. It's deeply oversold. I would have thought, even though the dollar is unlikely to ever be my favorite currency ever again, but it's due for a technical bounce in here from this oversold condition, and that would help the international scene somewhat. You know, we don't want a dollar crisis in here with the dollar going into free fall. So I think we've got scope for some reasonable short covering. Japan definitely needs a weaker currency. This strong yen is just a real hindrance to, well, it's a limiter in terms of earnings. Consolidated earnings hurts the competitiveness of these Japanese companies, and Japan needs good corporate profits and tax revenue from those corporate profits. It needs a thriving corporate sector, so it needs a weaker yen. And I think they should intervene to weaken it again. Whether they will or not is another story, but they did last month, so I wouldn't write off the possibility, and I hope they do. But on a very long-term basis, and this is the big picture long-term outlook, it's going to be the resources currencies, and it's going to be the Asian currencies. Some of those are resources currencies as well, but I was thinking specifically of things like the Singapore dollar. Among the resources currencies, you know, the Aussie dollar, the Canadian dollar, and some of those South American currencies, provided they keep their budget deficits under control, provided they continue to show some fiscal responsibility, which they have every incentive to do. So that's pretty much the big picture as I see it at this stage. I don't want to go on too long. I'm very grateful that the voice held out, and hopefully it'll get better next week as well. Meanwhile, have a great weekend. All the best.